And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, good morning, good morning, good morning. What I'm trying to pull up here on the screen for the video, guys, is copblock.org, the pledge page for a demo. Now, we're going to have tomorrow. Let me give you what's going on for the rest of the week. Today, we're having Judge Jim Gray, the VP candidate for the Libertarian Party. He's in the Phoenix area today, and we're going to have him on and get caught up with him. Now, in studio, it was over a year ago, I had Gary Johnson in at the workshop. So that had to be, almost 2 years ago. And, we knew at the time that he was probably going to run. And we were glad to see another, libertarian-leaning kind of guy up there along with Dr. Paul. And we were very supportive to the point that we had a fundraiser in Fountain Hills for him. And I told him, I said, look, you just got to get over it, man. There's going to be guys wearing Ron Paul Revolution shirts there and so on, but they'll be there supporting you and taking pictures and doing videos and giving you money and, whatever. But it's all, a message thing. So he was really cool about it. And, we enjoyed having him in town. And then we had Judge Gray on right after the nominating convention where he was the VP pick, and we had him on. And today we're just going to, in the last segment of the show, he's landing the airport. Hopefully his plane's not late. And we'll just do a quick interview with him. And the party and everything wanted me. All right, let me tell you the background. Whenever we had, I was county chairman in the 90s and so on, and, an activist, and I did a lot with the press and know a bunch of the media and such. So whenever, and of course in radio and everything, so whenever we had someone like Badnarik when he got the nomination, when we had, Dr. Paul came to Phoenix, when we have, any kind of a political kind of thing like that, it's always get Ernie, man, you'll get some press. So I just call a guy, create a list, and I give it to everybody and I update it, whenever we need to use it. And it's just all the television and radio and newspaper assignment desks. You have the producers, you have the talk show host producers, you have the assignment desks for the various newspapers and the radio guys and television guys and the newsrooms and blah, blah, blah. So I would put like KTVK TV3 is a, I don't know what it is now, but that's independent now. But, the ABC affiliate, the NBC affiliate, you go, okay, here's the NBC guy, here's the ABC, here's the CBS, here's the local PBS, kind of whatever. Here's the person I called and checked. Okay, this is the person's name. This is their email. This is their fax number. Here is the address. Here's the phone number. I mean, the text message, Twitter. Give them the whole spiel, and as years go on, and keep adding all kinds of crap. And, the weeks go by, it changes all the time, so you just call to update it. And I had a process. And you just can't get, I'm tired. I'm done with politicking, man. I mean, activism and stuff, that's not even the same thing as far as I'm concerned. But, the actual politicking, because it's all right, we'll get Ernie to do it. No, that's not. I mean, you can't do this? I mean, seriously, I give you the list. Now, this is the mechanism by which I tell you, any of you out there, you want to get a bunch of press? You got somebody coming and visit. You want. This is the maximum you're going to get, and this is how I do it. This is not a secret, okay? I have the list of all of the people that, because they're lazy. They're not going to go and they're not going to call you up. Heck, even if they know if it's on TV, somebody doesn't make them do it, they ain't doing it, all right? So you want them to know it's coming. You want to remind them the day of it's coming, and you want to confirm that they know it came. And how you do that is like this. I go, all right, I call, assignment desk, please. Hello, my name is so-and-so. We have such-and-such coming in on this date, and we need to confirm that we got our updated information of who to get the information to. Who is the assignment editor that would yada, yada, yada? I'd be so-and-so. Okay, what's their email? What's their fax number? What's their? They don't use fax much anymore, but you do it anyway, okay? Because it's free. Who cares? So I go, all right, now we're going to be sending this. I'm going to send you a confirmation email. We got this right and correct and so on. You know, send me something if there's a change and everything. And, you know, we'll be reminding you on the day before and the day of or whatever. Okay, cool, peace. Done. I mean, if your conversation went more than 30 seconds, you're babbling, okay? That's just, you know, ding. You know, just tap the button. You want to make sure that, you know, here it comes. They got five gazillion other things to do. You know, that's just a, you know, just a frequency thing. Because in marketing, they have a thing they call frequency and reach. Reach, excuse me. Reach means how many people get to see it. Frequency is how many times those people see it. So you want to have a frequency of at least three. If you didn't hear the commercial three times, if you didn't watch the commercial three times, if you didn't, you know, you didn't see it. First time, oh, yeah, it was kind of, you know, whatever. And you forgot about it. Second time, oh, yeah, I remember, you know, okay, and you forgot. Third time, okay, yeah, it was about, you know, you don't see a commercial at least three times. You didn't see it. It doesn't penetrate. You didn't know it was there. So what they look at reach is they go, okay, how many people saw the commercial or heard the ad three times? That counts as one. Three is one, two and one is none. Okay, that's how it works. So this is the concept that they're, you know, going at. And that's why we did frequency with the signs. You know, we'd put up stuff. I go, yeah, you saw it five gazillion times. Did you get it? You know, I win. So what we do is I go, okay, got all the information, confirmed with them. You kind of go through the front. Even though I got the number, you know, to the, you know, the actual assignment desk or something, even at the reception, you kind of ping in them. Hey, this is so-and-so. I need to, you know, such-and-such, and this is why. It's kind of through the chain. You want to just kind of spread the rumors. Kind of, you know, here we go. So-and-so is going to be in town, whatever. So you get there, and you get all the information. Then immediately, you send them whatever it is, a PDF of whatever it is that you got. You fax it to them. You send it to them. It gets the dates, the times, the whatever, who's going to be here, the contact numbers, all that. You send it. Okay. Now, they may or may not kind of set that aside. Because especially television, man, if it bleeds, it leads. I mean, they want to see flames and death, dying, and destruction and people and whatever and so on, especially if it was written about in the newspaper that morning. I mean, now the newspapers drive everything, you know, radio and television. And not so much anymore, but man, it used to. And the internet, and it kind of still does, you know. So if it's on a site, if you got a link, so that's where Freedom's Phoenix comes in. You go ahead, you put it on Freedom's Phoenix, you send them the link to it. Oh, they got all the information there, so we make sure you got the page all nice and pretty on whatever it is that you're doing. If it's got a link, I just link, done. Even better than a PDF link. So you take and you send that to them, and then this is the key. You have a brown envelope. I can't count how many times Donna and I and a bunch of the activists have done this. You put all the information, some trinkets and trash. You have the, you know, like the tracks, the brochures, the business cards, the artwork, you know, whatever, you know, crap that gives them, you know, heck, sometimes we even use CDs and put data with graphics on it or memory keys, whatever, use just a CD. And we put all that stuff in there because you did all the work for them. They put the graphic up. You know, on television, they get this. They get a picture that they put in the paper. They are lazy. Okay? They got other crap to do. You put all this stuff together and you hand deliver it to the studio. This is for so and so. Then the day of, you call them and then you start filling up the schedule. And I can't get them to do it. I, you know, Dave, not my problem. like that. And in the last segment today, we talked to Judge Gray.
This year, you can experience a taste of Libertopia. Libertopia is a voluntary community based on freedom and peace. Visit the three-day festival this October 11th to 14th at Humphrey's Half Moon Inn on the San Diego Bay. With speakers, workshops, parties, and wonderful people, Libertopia has it all. Become a member of this peaceful voluntary community now. Visit libertopia.org. Tickets and hotel rooms are going quickly, so make sure to reserve yours today. Find out more at libertopia.org.
You can connect with the Liberty Radio Network via our Facebook page at facebook.lrn.fm. That's facebook.lrn.fm.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
And don't need them in France because they're burning the cars. The French riot night. Cops injured, cars torched, schools burnt, you know, blah, blah, blah. This is just, you know, here we go. French police reported that the clashes involved some 100 rioters and 150 officers. Began around 9 p.m. Monday and ended around 4 a.m. Tuesday. At least three bystanders were hurt after rioters pulled drivers from their cars while hijacking the vehicles, the Associated Press reported. The confrontations were very, very violent. You know, it goes on and on and on. This is going to become more. This is France. I mean, you know, France. Seriously? I surrender. I would think that they, you know, I always wanted to, you know, I want to talk about that too, because this whole concept, they go, French, a bunch of wimps, you know, they just surrender. You know, their flag is white. You know what I mean? That kind of thing, that attitude. And I'm like, why do they get that reputation? Well, I guess it probably mostly comes from World War II, where they, the Nazis overran Paris, you know, and France, and they come and they said, yep, you know, the government there, they just kind of, you know, we're whatever you want us to do, boss, and we'll keep our jobs, and we're the bureaucrats. Did the people surrender? Oh, it was the French underground. You know, that was just the people. They were the biggest pain in the butt to Nazi Germany. You know, conquer's easy, control is not, you know? And so to say that is, I don't think that's really representative of the French people. You know, maybe, you know, the willingness of French government to just, you know, as long as they get to keep their tie on and not be a noose, they'll just do whatever they're told, which is not necessarily a bad idea. I mean, you know, I mean, think about it. They come in, you know, banging it. You go, yes, boss, you know, I'd be good. And then you're not so good as far as they, you know, they just don't know. So it's, you know, it could be a tactic. Yeah, whatever. I just don't think. Certainly generations ago, when you see, you know, the French, you know, they resist in their own way. You know, I always thought, I'm like, seriously? You know, why would you even show an outward resistance, man? I'd be, you know, putting on my nylon stockings and my eyeliner and being all kind of, oh, you're so strong and look so good in your uniform, you know, and then they just don't wake up in the morning and you got all their goodies. So I'm just, you know, whatever. Everybody wants to do it their way. They want, no, we got to, you know, you keep your cannon fodder, man. You just keep going and until the bodies pile up big enough, they just run out of ammunition. Is that how it works? So I reserve the right to fight my battles the way I want to. That's just my opinion. But it's going to get more and more. The state's going to have a problem in controlling, you know, I mean, how are you, you know, their attitude is if you're not in control, if you're not regimented, if you're not in line, if you're not wearing the right clothes, if you're not marching to the right drum, if you're not doing it their way, if you're not, you know, on the sidelines of the parade waving the little flags, you know, if you're not on the sidelines sitting there going Sieg Heil and stuff, you know, if you're not in control, then you're out of control. I kid you not. This happened at the Olympics. There was a guy, and come to find out, he has Parkinson's or he had some kind of ailment or something anyway, and it was a bicycle race. He was arrested because of the expression on his face. He wasn't smiling enough. He wasn't happy. Everybody's like, oh, yeah, go. Oh. They look and they catch him. They see him. Oh, he'd be a frowning. He's not flag waving, you know, and they arrested him. You know, you think I'm kidding? You know, this is where we're going, man. This is like, you wonder why you watch the old new Red Dawn, which is coming out. Finally, they're releasing it. And it was the Chinese that were the bad guys that invaded the U.S. and high school kids come out and do whatever. Patrick Swayze and Charlie Sheen, you know, were the stars of that. Back in the early 80s during the, you know, Ronald Reagan administration, we're at the peak of the Cold War. They went into Afghanistan and all that, you know, that's where empires go to die. And so while they're doing that, here comes this movie Red Dawn. And it's all about, you know, I mean, it had, you know, cool scenes in there, you know, where they go, the Cuban guy they invade to come into central, it's Colorado or something. They go, all right, you go to the local hardware store or the gun store and you look for form number blah 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 blah, and it's all the BATF, you know, form. They get, you know, the stack of the yellow forms, and they come and they go, yep, we know where all the guns are. Go get them. So I'm just going, yeah, will they include that this time? Well, you know, it was a couple of years ago they had the movie done, and I tell you, one of the main guys is the guy that played Captain America, I think, you know, the guy that played Captain Kirk's dad in the first Star Trek. I mean, this is one of the first, this is what was going to launch him. I mean, you know, he was already, you know, had this movie in the can before, and then the Chinese government bought up the studio or something. They go, oh, hell no. No, no, we're not going to be the back. No, no. So they changed all the graphics and something, you know, just enough to where it's North Koreans. So, yeah, that bastion of economic powerhouse, North Korea, is going to invade the U.S. You know, I'm like, wow. I mean, they're really stretching this. So, anyway, Hollywood. So, I'm looking for the frowning thing. So, let me go ahead and do this. You guys, I mean, you know, arrested at Olympics, not smiling. I bet you that gets it. Arrested at Olympics for not smiling. Okay. Parkinson's disease sufferer, 54, held by police at Olympic cycling road race because he would not smile. I mean, you can't make this stuff up, you know? So here we go. Let's see. Former soldier Mark Orsford arrested for his manner, state of dress, and proximity to the course as cyclists came through Leatherhead. He was detained and questioned for 5 hours. There's him, his wife, and his little girl. A father with Parkinson's disease was arrested as he watched the Olympic cycling road race because he failed to smile or look like he was enjoying himself. Mark Orsford, a martial arts trainer and former soldier, claims that he was thrown to the floor and handcuffed just as cyclists passed by. A worried wife, Nicola, only found out he was being held after she reported him missing when he did not turn up for their daughter's 9th birthday party. The 54-year-old had his fingerprints, DNA, and mugshot taken before being questioned about why he did not appear to be enjoying the event on July 28th. Police said Mr. Worsford, who was held for over 5 hours, was arrested because of his manner, his state address, and his proximity to the course. A spokesman added that the arrest was necessary to avoid a breach of the peace because he was standing near a group of protesters. But Mr. Worsford, who was diagnosed with Parkinson's in 2010, said that one of the symptoms of the disease is muscle rigidity, which can cause his face to become expressionless and mask-like. Mr. Worsford, who had stopped to watch the men's road race in Leatherhead, Surrey, after holding a Taekwondo demonstration nearby, said officers told him he was being arrested and taken to Regal, whatever it is, police station because he was not smiling. I was sitting minding my own business. Go to the local newspaper. Before I knew anything, the police grabbed me off the 7-foot wall, threw me to the floor, and cuffed me. So all I saw of the cycle race was between the feet of people on the pavement. You know, and you didn't think it was going to happen, did you?
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock. Hello. From the BEA Beautiful Studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com here in Arizona, where it's very nice and very hot. You know, it is hot. Hot. Don't go outside in the middle of the hot, okay? But I'm telling you, anywhere else, I don't really mind the hot so much. You know, when you go out, it's hot. You know, and I go, you know, I can make it to the pool. But it's the middle of the day and it's really hot. It's not the heat, the ambient heat when you're out. It's when you touch anything. If you had gloves, it starts about April, you know, into April and May sometime. You go, oh, summer's here, when you can feel the radiant heat off of everything. That's where the heat comes from. You know, that's one thing they say, oh, record heat. Oh, we got heat, man. Record, it's record. No, I tell you what, it's called a heat island. I remember in the late 70s, you know, mid 70s, I moved to Arizona from Florida when I was like 12 years old and 72, 3, around in there, sixth grade. And every summer in the afternoon, about 4 o'clock, like clockwork, during the monsoon, thunderstorms. They'd come in, boom, it'd rain, go, done. Monsoon, monsoon, monsoon. It was like clockwork. They had beautiful, big, giant sunsets. I mean, it was everybody go with lawn chairs out front. I mean, I saw this when I was a kid in Florida, you know, in the Keys. You know, it's a, you know, I'm sorry, it's time to watch the sunset. And, you know, people go out in their front yard, sidewalks, neighbors, whatever, have these beautiful sunsets. I mean, it was just, it's rare you see them anymore. It used to be, it'd be like a quilt across the sky, all purple. I mean, it was just beautiful, awesome. Finally, we saw, I mean, we were over at a friend's house. I told Donna, I said, Donna, look, you see this? It used to be every day like this. And what happened is they created so much concrete, so much construction, so much building, so much sprawl, so much zoning. No, you're not allowed to live in a house and have your bakery underneath it. You know, no, you got to drive to go to work. You can't do it out. You got to drive. You know, that whole concept is just gone. You know, you're going to have a city, but it's not going to be a city. It's going to be kind of a rural little thing. Like here, I live in the city limits of Phoenix on a 2-acre irrigated little mini farm. Okay, I got horses all around me. Now, in the city of Phoenix, people don't know this. Central Phoenix, all irrigated, you might as well just call it the Midwest. You know, people came here, get away from the pollen and all the, you know, stuff that make their allergies bad and all that, and asthma and so on. But what do? You know, they brought it here. So what I saw happen by living here is I saw the clouds and the monsoon less and less coming into the valley. It was, you'd see, I mean, enormous, 80,000 foot tops, these anvils of cumulus clouds all around the valley, and they don't come in. I mean, it's like if you look at the radar screens, you'll see it's like a pebble in a stream. It just goes around it because of the column of hot air. It's so hot here because of all the concrete, all the shopping malls, all the black, all the blah, 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 blah. And I'm telling you, that has changed, certainly here, the temperature. So when they go, oh, in Phoenix, it's 102. You damn skippy it is. You know, because that's where we fry eggs. It's on that sidewalk. So I just, you know, it's not this. And then they started, finally, just in the last couple of years, they started admitting this. Yeah, the record temperatures are coming from where they put the thermometers. Who puts the thermometers where they put them? The government. Why? Because they want whatever they want. You know, so anybody here, so we have friends that, oh, it gets hot here. I mean, sometimes you can be out in the middle of the desert and it's still 120. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, it's, you know, there's days it gets hot. But, you know, people that live just a few miles away from the city or up on the edges, all of a sudden, man, we're 10 degrees colder than you. Well, what the heck you're talking about? So as we're looking for land and so on, we're going, you know, we'll just go 20 miles up northwest up here out in the desert. And all of a sudden, boom, boom. Drops, and at night, that's why they always say, oh, it's, you know, you burn up in the day and at night you freeze because you don't have concrete holding the heat. That's why, you know, sun goes away, temperature goes down. I mean, you're looking for a sweater. So I'm just, you know, FYI. All right. Now, We had a story. I think we put it up a second time. You know, Ray McGovern put this, sent this to us. This is all right. I'm going to tell you this because all right. Ray McGovern, CIA analyst, goes to presidents, give them their their report on Bin Laden determined to take over plane and do America. Okay, he's that guy. Well. He has been really adamant. He knows. He's like, man, this is, you guys, a bunch of liars, want to go to war, stop the war. Now, Ray would come to Scottsdale to, it looks like he's in remission. He had cancer and he's getting treatments over the years and so on, and he seems like he's going to be okay. And so we got to know Ray quite a bit. I was producing for Charles and so on, got to know him and who he was, and we'd talk and so on. And when we first started doing Freedom's Phoenix, he would write for us. And he still, he sends us the stuff and everything. And he's one of the few, I can count on like one finger, okay, the people that I do this for. They send me the articles and I enter them on the Freedom's Phoenix forum under their name. He sends me an email. He says, Ernie, here, I put this in the Continuum News or whatever it is that, his primary people that he writes for. But he always sends it to me. Here, go ahead and put this up on Freedom's Phoenix. I don't do that for anybody because I'm just, no. I set the system up, you do it your damn self. The reason I do it for Ray, because he was having, when we first started doing Freedom's Phoenix, it didn't have the same interface for Safari, when you're doing Apple. As Firefox got better and, came onto the scene, well, then you can use Firefox from your Mac or your PC, and it interfaces with our site easily, and it's not a problem. But Safari was having problems. They couldn't put graphics up or do something. It was some glitch that we had that we worked on. During that time, I go, because I wanted Ray McGovern's perspective. I go, Ray, I'll take care of it. You just email it to me. I'll take care of it. Okay? So that's what he does. So we stay in communication, which is kind of cool because we get to communicate back and forth that way. Well, he sends this stuff to me, and we put it up. Now, this one, I think we put it up a second time because I want to make sure that people understand, his perspective on this. Israel's Bomb-Iran timetable. I'm just going to read a couple of the paragraphs and we'll talk about it. You kind of get the idea of what's going on. As the clock ticks down to the U.S. elections in November, another clock is ticking in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, where the Israeli forces should exploit the American political timetable to pressure President Obama to support an attack on Iran's nuclear sites, writes ex-CIA analyst Ray McGovern. And here's Ray. More Washington insiders are coming to the conclusion that Israel's leaders are planning to attack Iran before the U.S. election in November in the expectation that American forces will be drawn in. There is widespread recognition that without U.S. military involvement, an Israeli attack would be highly risky and at best only marginally successful. At this point, to dissuade Israeli leaders from mounting such an attack might require a public statement by President Barack Obama warning Israel not to count on U.S. forces, not even for the cleanup. Though Obama has done pretty much everything short of making such a public statement, he clearly wants to avoid a confrontation with Israel in the weeks before the election. However, Obama's silence regarding a public warning speaks volumes to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The recent pilgrimages to Israel by very senior U.S. officials, including the Secretaries of State and Defense, carrying identical "please don't bomb Iran just yet" banners, has met stony faces and stone walls. Like the guns of August in 1914, the dynamic for war appears inexorable. Had to look that up. It's like inevitable kind of thing. Senior U.S. and Israeli officials focus publicly on a window of opportunity, but different ones. And it goes on, but the bottom line is this. They're going to use politics between the GOP and Obama. Now, who's going to be more Israeli support? The Christian right just, slamming their fist on the table. Bomb Iran.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free from your life.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead.
So
and read you a little bit of Ray McGovern's analysis here, because I think this is what we have to fear the most. Of all the news, we haven't been talking about this a lot. We have the, it's all the same thing. You think Syria and Iran and Israel and Obama and Romney and Jim presidential electing and all the kind of we rule you stuff, you know, isn't related. They're all related. You know, it's all part of the same thing. You know, it's all who gets the money and why. And, you know, you get the bill. I mean, this is no secret. But, Ray being a CIA analyst, this is what he did to presidents. He's sitting in the office saying, look, let me explain it to you. You know, this is what's going on. This is what we know. This is what. So it's gotten to the point now that they have, you know, a whistleblower, Sybil Edmonds. We've had her on. And Susan Lindauer and all these guys. I mean, they know. Well, you have Sybil and Ray are friends, and they have created a whistleblower group of a bunch of people like this that, you know, go, look, man, we know what can we do? I mean, we're literally have a conscience, and we're trying to save millions of lives. You know, I what do you do? Well, whatever you can. So they come together, and they make presentations to whoever will listen, write op-eds, do something, say, look, we know. Now, we've had so many. It's like Downing Street memo thing. I got to tell you this story before I read this. How much time we got? We have, what's today's card? Is this today's? We have, in the second hour, Mr. X. You put his name up here? You're not supposed to put his name on here. Yeah, but, you know, I read whatever you say, baby. All right, scratch it out. Can't say his name. He wants to be clandestine. Okay. So we have a gentleman that is, been living off grid for 20-something years. We met him up at the Freedom Festival, you know, the Jackalope Freedom Festival, and he's got a nice little rig going on. I've known of him for a long time, but he's, we'll go ahead and talk to him. He goes, look, we don't be using my name. We'll be telling people you and Alma talking about it. Goes, no. I've been trying to keep secret all this time, and you're outing me, man. You know, I'm doing just fine. You know, so he's going to come on and talk about it, and he's Mr. X. All right. So for the rest of this, I got 6 minutes. All right, I'm going to do this. Let's go ahead and read. I don't want to miss out on his prose here. But another Israeli window or zone has to do with the pre-election period of the next 12 weeks in the United States. Last week, former Mossad chief Ephraim Halevi told Israeli TV viewers, the next 12 weeks are very critical in trying to assess whether Israel will attack Iran with or without American backup. It would be all too understandable, given Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's experience with President Obama, that Netanyahu has come away with the impression that Obama can be bullied, particularly when he finds himself in a tight political spot. For Netanyahu, the president's perceived need to outdistance Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney in the Love for Israel department puts Obama in a box. This, I believe, is the key window of opportunity that is uppermost in Netanyahu's calculations. Virtually precluded, in Netanyahu's view, is any possibility that Obama could keep U.S. military forces on the sidelines if Israel and Iran became embroiled in serious hostilities. What I believe the Israeli leader worries about most about is the possibility that a second-term Obama would feel much freer not to commit U.S. forces on Israel's side. A second-term Obama also might use U.S. leverage to force Israeli concessions on thorny issues relating to Palestine. If preventing Obama from getting that second term is also part of Netanyahu's calculation, then he also surely knows that even a minor dust-up with Iran, whether it escalates or not, would drive up the price of gasoline just before the election, an unwelcome prospect for Team Obama. It's obvious that hardline Israeli leaders would much rather have Mitt Romney to deal with for the next 4 years. The former Massachusetts governor recently was given a warm reception when he traveled to Jerusalem with a number of Jewish American financial backers in tow to express his solidarity with Netanyahu and his policies. Against this high-stakes political background, I've personally come by some new anecdotal information that I find particularly troubling. On July 30th, the Baltimore Sun posted my op-ed, Israel fixing the intelligence to justify an attack on Iran. Information acquired the very next day increased my suspicion and concern. Former intelligence analyst and I were preparing a proposal to establish direct communication links between the U.S. and Iranian navies in order to prevent an accident or provocation in the Persian Gulf from spiraling out of control. Learning that an official Pentagon draft paper on that very same issue has been languishing in the Senate for more than a month did not make us feel any better when our own proposal was ignored. Still, it is difficult to understand why anyone wishing to avoid escalation in the Persian Gulf would delay or outright oppose such a fail-safe measure. Seeking input from other sources with insight into U.S. military preparations, I learned that although many U.S. military moves have been announced, others, with the express purpose of preparation for hostilities with Iran, have not been made public. One source reported that U.S. forces are on hair trigger alert and that covert operations inside Iran, many of them acts of war by any reasonable standard, have been increased. Bottom line, we were warned that the train had left the station, that any initiative to prevent miscalculation or a provocation in the Gulf was bound to be far too late to prevent escalation into a shooting war. And it goes on and on. They're looking for an excuse and reasons, and that pretty much sums it up. Now, this is what's going on. Israel runs our foreign policy. That's what's going on. The what is desired is that the United States is, you know, their boy, or Israel is an aircraft carrier in the middle of the Middle East for us, or something. I mean, you know, it's they, them, those. To think that they represent a country is to not understand what's really going on. They don't sit in a country looking at the world, you know, moving pieces of how it applies to them. They're more like multinational corporations and banks and so on that look at the planet. You know, they see, you know, they're not, you know, have a loyalty to anything other than, you know, their power. So they're moving pieces on a table. And the link between the United States and Israel is what keeps us involved in Middle East politics. It is way, way, way cheaper just to double the price of oil and just buy it. China's learning that. I mean, you know, why do we got it? You know, they'll say, well, we got to keep our standard of living, keeping oil under $100 a barrel. And I'm going, yeah, and it costs you $100-$200 a barrel to keep it under $100 a barrel. How's that working out for you? They don't care because they're the ones getting the other $200, you know, for the war machine and whatever. I mean, it's just, it's the economics, the argument, it's just stupid. And they're playing you for fools. So I know a lot of you in the audience, you know, aren't fools. You kind of get what's going on. But it's amazing to me how many people are, you know, especially religious. They are like, you know, God said, because this guy at the pulpit said God said that we need to go whip ass on, you know, turban head kind of whatever, and because we can. And Israel, 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 God said. And I'm going, you know, is really? I mean, how much in there is about, you know, blessed are the peacemakers and, you know, thou shalt not, you know, be a butthead. I mean, you know, trust me, I've used scripture. I can sit here and do a whole thing on the said, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because they shut down their thought process. And this is where my atheist friends, man, they got it going on. You can't argue it. You know, the mindset of a religious philosophy is that you don't question. It's faith. Faith in what? Faith in that you don't get to have an opinion. You just shut up, sit there, and do what you're told. And I'm just, this is a, you know, so that you can set up a situation to kill millions of people. I find it offensive to God. The whole concept, the idea, the promise. I am just, man, this is, we're, Israel does not want to have to deal with that damn Muslim, you know, Obama, the sympathies of, and he's got any kind of hesitation in, you know, killing, you know, the the other sand people. So I'm just like, all right. So is some, what's going to happen? I tell you, whatever happens, it's going to be to serve the fact that the GOP gets in there, and it's going to be more war. I think it's going to happen regardless.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not
welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. And one of the state's residents that, you know, uses his address is Arizona. And we'll call him Mr. X because he, you know, he likes being Mr. X. This is, it's interesting to me that we are able to live such a high quality of life, you know, given the technology that we have now. And Mr. X is a good example of that. Now, X, I got you there. Let's go ahead and get a level on you.
You got me here, Ernie.
Okay, here we go. Right there. All right.
Okay, now, okay. Is my level good?
Yeah, you're good. Now, let's go ahead and start from the beginning. I found it interesting that you are able to live such a quality lifestyle. And you know, I don't want to give out too much information. I'm going to let you go ahead and tell your story, and you share how you spend your days, who your friends are, how you entertain yourself, how do you communicate, how do you survive, and this, and how long you've been doing it. Go ahead and tell your story.
Well, I used to have a house and a business and stuff, and I finally came to the realization that owning property was like having the government have a handle on my back. And the more I grew my business, the more regulations and papers and forms and permits and taxes and stuff. And one day it was just like, you know, I'm not having fun at this anymore. And I, you know, it's like my life is for my pleasure. It's not for somebody else's pleasure. So I just kind of sold everything and bought an RV and I live really frugally, and I've got solar panels on my roof that gives me freedom to not be plugged in, and pretty much free power after you get them paid for. And I've got an internet satellite dish, and so I'm connected intellectually kind of with the world, and I just... you know, shop at thrift shops and kind of take care of myself.
Okay, well, let me go ahead and ask some questions. Your rig, you know, how much do you want to talk about your rig, what it is and everything?
Well, it's an old bus.
Okay, and tell us about it.
Just last year, I finally, after trying to think about it for years, I finally installed solar hot water, which is really cool. So now I don't have to spend money on propane.
Well, this is, I mean, it is a large Greyhound, one of the large buses. So, I mean, the storage underneath is, you know, is amazing. You put all kinds of stuff in there. But so you have living quarters that seem fairly, I mean, you don't have pop outs, but you got a big ass bus. So is it diesel or gas?
Yeah, it's diesel.
Yep. Well, that has its benefit. Now, you also pull a vehicle behind you, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that gives you kind of a little bit more mobility to go around. Now, how long have you been doing this?
About 23 years, I think. Summer of 1989 is when I hit the road.
Okay, now times have changed from then to now. I mean, has it gotten, are you more hassled, you know, in your travels now than you were before, or the restrictions?
Well, you know, when I first went on the road, I didn't really know what I was doing, and I just, one of the advantages is, you know, like if you want to stay someplace for a while, you pull into a park or a mobile home park or something like that, and you stay there, and then if you get tired of being there, then you don't have to get a lawyer and advertise your house and go through all of that stuff, which is a royal nightmare. You just turn the ignition key and you go someplace else. You stop paying rent where you are, and so yeah, if you camp in a, it's getting there. The government is getting tighter and tighter on trying to control. I guess there's a lot of veterans who don't have any money and who are like living on government land, which supposedly they fought for. And the federal agents, the BLM and the Forest Service and the various sheriffs and stuff like that, are like doing these sweeps out through the forest, trying to roust people out. Who aren't really hurting anybody. So it's like if you're camped out, if you go camping now, it's like you get accosted by these goons in Gestapo uniforms just threatening you and demanding that you prove that you're, I don't know, that you fit their criteria of what camping is supposed to be. It's insane.
Well, describe that to me. I mean, let's go ahead and walk this through. It's 89. You sell all your goodies. I got some resources. I mean, what did you do? You put it all into your equipment? Did you put some in precious metals? Do you have any kind of assets in the grid somewhere? Or are you just, living off love? I mean, how are you sustaining yourself?
Well, I was invested in the stock market, and during the dot-com boom, I managed to do fairly well, and then that crashed, and I didn't lose all of it. So I still have some assets from that, and I basically put my assets into my equipment. Like, I've got tools, and I've got my solar panels, and I've got stuff like that, so it costs me very little to live.
So this that's one thing that I noticed is that the top of the bus is just got all kinds of equipment. You got communication stuff. You got a lot of solar panels. You have the energy for you to live per month. I mean, how much if you're hunkered down and assuming you're not planting gardens, you know, how much does it cost you to live a month?
Well, yeah, I don't know. You know, it's like, I have to drive to town to get groceries and occasionally buy some propane, and that's about it.
So how much do you travel? How often do you change campsites? Now, when we were up at the Jackalope Freedom Festival, you found, you know what? This is really nice. I think I'll just stay here a while.
Yeah, well, that's it depends upon, you know, some places you get accosted. And the rules in the forest, if you want to camp rather than going someplace to an RV park and renting a site, if you want to camp, they've got generally these 14-day rules. When I first was doing this, there were certain areas that they had like 30 days. And, you know, how they determine that 14 days is what free people should be able to camp on their land is, you know, I don't know how, you know, it's just thuggishness. But
will they come and chalk your tire or something, take a picture from a plane? How do they know?
Well, they come, and some places they go around and patrol constantly. So as soon as you show up, they know you're there. They write down your license number, and, you know, if you're there 15 days later, there's over in one area that guys were given $275 fines for having been 15 days in a campsite.
Wow.
Wow is right. But then there are other places where you know, they're fine as long as you're clean and not making a mess and not digging, you know, not...
When we come back, we'll go ahead and talk about some of the more details. I got a bunch more questions that I think the audience would like to ask, and we'll ask them. We come back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and my guest, Mr. X of Arizona. We'll be right back.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. We're calling back Mr. X here. I got you on, Mr. X.
You got me.
Okay. Yeah, I just thought you wanted to change the batteries. All right. As you're living off of the grid, you're still on the grid. Let's go ahead and talk about that. It's 1989. You get a nice big, you know, you say, you know what, I'm going to take my resources, I'm going to go ahead and put it in the stock market, you know, or whatever investments you thought, you know, were good eye and did. You know, you go through the .com, you go up, woo, I did okay. You probably got, you got out in time enough to, you know, keep some of that. And then, how are you doing on precious metals? Is that part of your portfolio or what?
I've got a little bit, yeah.
Okay, so you're still, a lot of your retirement and such and everything's still in the market in some way?
A little bit. I don't have a lot, and I live really frugally.
Okay, do you have a steady income? Do you have, like, Social Security or retirement or a pension or anything?
No, I was always smart enough not to pay in enough to Social Security that they don't consider me a real person.
Well, that's not
so
necessarily
bad. No, I don't have any income.
So how do you sustain yourself?
Well, I just, like I said, I live really frugally off of I'm eating my seed corn is what I'm doing. I'm living off my assets. I make a little bit of money here and there, selling stuff on. I used to sell stuff on eBay and Amazon. That's getting more and more difficult as the rules get more and more.
They're cinching
to
down.
Deal with.
Yeah, they're cinching down on that one too. Okay.
Yeah, it used to be I could sell something on eBay and put a bunch of postage stamps on it and drop it in the mailbox, but now you've got to drive into town and hand it over the counter. So, you know, it's like it may cost me $10 worth of gas to make a $5 profit. Well, that's not a profit.
You know, so that is another thing that I noticed. You know, a lot of people don't. Okay, I'll make this point, and you'll see what I mean. There was a time to where you could you went to the airport, you went through the metal detector, you know, along with your friends. It could walk you to the gate, meet you at the gate, whatever, and hang out, and you know, it's all good, and boom, then they leave and whatever, and you would be able to get on an Eastern Airlines flight. This is in the 80s. You would be able to get on an Eastern Airlines flight that was a shuttle between New York to Washington D.C., Boston, whatever. You get on, sit down, you're in the air, and you pay for your ticket with a credit card on the plane, okay? Nobody knew who you were.
I used to People Express from Florida to New York.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, you know, that was just the way it was, like getting on a bus, okay? All that changed. Well, a lot of people don't know, since 9/11 and so on, you know, a lot of it has changed in dealing with the post office, too. And even, you know, UPS, Federal Express, all this kind of stuff, you can't give them a package that you can just drop in a mailbox or come with. They have to pick it up from an address, or you physically have to go into the post office to mail a package, right?
Anything over 13 ounces.
If it's over 13 ounces, you have to go in to do it. And I'm like, wow, 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 wow. And what was the reasoning that they tried to rationalize to you when this started?
Well, they didn't try and rationalize to me anything. They just told me what the rules were. You know, as Ernie Hancock says, they will because they can.
Yeah, I remember when this was happening. Of course, it was because, you know, anthrax bombs, whatever, because, yeah, they can't. They want to have an address. And a good friend of mine, you met him up there, you know, Mike Duggar, he's a postal carrier. And when all this was going on, he used to be state chair of the Libertarian Party. And he's like, look, let me tell you, you want to see what government's doing? Let me tell you all about all the rules and stuff and why and reasoning. And it's just, you know, Nazi Germany clampdown crap. So that makes it more difficult for you. And you see, this is the economy grinding to a halt because of itty-bitty little things just like this. You have someone living out on the edge like yourself that's being able to sustain themselves using the economy that is available to him on the internet, the mailing, everything, and they change one little rule and all of a sudden, boom, a whole level of existence is taken away.
Yep. Actually, you know, that I read Atlas Shrugged a long time ago, and it really resonated with me, and you know, at a certain point, I just shrugged. You know, I said, I'm not contributing to this insanity anymore. I'm out of here.
Okay, so I'm going, all right, so here we got a shrugger on the road looking for his gulch or just creating his own. And he goes, all right, just zero all those out. So what happens is you go on the road, you start, living very frugally, so you don't need a whole lot of income. You have a little of your seed corn, as you say there. Now, let's go ahead and talk about your monthly bills. So if you, most of your fuel is spent going seasonally from northern Arizona down to the desert, I would imagine. So when you go, it's winter time, it's cold, you're going, you know what, I'm going into warmer climes. So you come down into the desert areas and you enjoy the 70-degree weather and why everybody comes down here. When it starts getting the 115 thing, you go, you know what? There's 70-degree weather up here on the rim. Boom, there you go. So aside from that, well, I guess you include that in your monthly average over the year. But I'm wanting to get an idea of what you eat, how you eat, how much you spend a month on all your utilities, everything, because you do satellite communication. I saw we pulled up, and there's your dish you got out behind your rig. The boy be hooked up to the internet. Okay, so I'm going, give us your bills.
Basically, my expenses are communications, insurance on my vehicle. I don't have any insurance on myself, and food and propane. That's about my. I have a cell phone, which costs me like $43 a month, and my internet connection is $60 a month. So roughly $100 a month goes to communication, and then I've got my vehicle insurance, which is a semi-annual payment, and then food, and you know, it's like I get my food from Bountiful Baskets and from the grocery store. I suppose I spend, I don't write this stuff down. So I used to keep track of stuff, but I don't anymore. But it's like every time I buy a Bountiful Baskets box, it's like $27. So that would be every week or two.
So you can keep your utilities down under $300 a month?
I don't have any utilities. I mean, I've got the
your bills,
the cell phone connection.
Your bills, monthly bills. If you somebody gave you $300 a month, that can cover you.
Well, you know, every once in a while you got to change the oil and you got to buy tires and it's like tires. I search around and I find used tires, and so I don't know how to.
You need to get yourself a spreadsheet, man. Or not. What? I mean, just an idea of how much, to do this. The audience is going, let's think about it in the break. Because there's an audience out there going, look, he seems to be living pretty large. He's in Arizona. It's nice weather. He's going, when it's hot in the valley, he's up in the cool. When it gets cold up in the north, he's down in the warm. So it's like, okay, well, what kind of life do you live? How does he sustain himself? How does he entertain himself? How much does it cost for him to make the travel? The annual cost is. So I got, how much money do I got? How, long could I survive? What equipment do I need? We'll find out.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. If you're going to do this, Arizona's one of the better places to do it. It's a lot of open land out in the middle of the nothing. They got to make a big, giant effort to go, find you to begin with. But that doesn't mean they're not trying. Okay, so let's go ahead and sum this up. Here we have Mr. X has 20 years ago decided, I'm good. You know, I feel more comfortable. I'm tired of, you know, for the man. I read Atlas Shrugged. It kind of, you know, piqued me. And I got enough resources to go and be off. And for whatever reason, I'm gone. He buys probably one of the better rigs at the time. I mean, he's probably big, giant Greyhound bussing kind of, you know, customized out and do. And I think it was already customized quite a bit, and then he kept refurbing it. And diesel, so, you know, it's got some power. It's got the energy. It's got the ability. It's got, you know, the economy. He goes out on the road. He pulls his VW microbus or something behind him and go around that he can do his little, you know, jaunts to where he needs to go. The internet's coming on. He's starting to use that as a way to do commerce and economy and subsidize his assets and so on. But his monthly income, really imagine, if you were allowed to just park. You know, I'm out in the middle of the nothing and, you know, leave me alone. And we've had stories about this before where this one woman, I remember, she had created a nice little homestead home for herself out in the middle of the forest, had a nice little garden, had nice little, you know, just, you know, very clean, nice place. The forest rangers were, you know, didn't find any problem with her other than orders you must leave, and they just stripped her off the land and done and gone. Now, if you can do that and have a trailer with all your potted plants, I guess you can kind of set up every 14 days. And if you hit the 15th day, $200+ fine. Which may be their annual income. So this is, you know, if you were just left alone, you could live fairly well, you know, on a very small amount. Oh, my goodness, if you had any kind of pension or Social Security or something, you'd probably be living large. Oh, heck no. You're not consuming energy. You're not getting it from the man. You're not on the grid. You're not supporting the system. You're not making Rockefeller some money. So what they do is they say, all right, you have to have the ability to move. Now, I guess you can hike, I guess, but, you know, to camp, you got a vehicle. That means you got to have fuel. It means you got to have insurance. It means you got to have, you got to have, you got to have. During the got to haves, all of a sudden now, an engine eventually will go out. There's $4,000, you know, expense that he has to come up with. You got to get tires. You got to have regular maintenance just for sitting there. So these are the things that just keep adding on. It's more government stuff, more requirements of. So you really don't know what it is that you can just by breathing in and out as a human being on this planet. You know, you can pretty much take care of yourself and live a standard of living that we've become accustomed to for my big screen TV. So now we're looking at, all right, as we're working on the battery project and the power thing, we're doing that, a lot of progress we made in the last couple of days. We'll get over it next week. We'll get you updated. But go to battery project as category on Freedom's Phoenix, and you'll start to see what we're doing. But so what happens is they go, all right, here are individuals that said, we're just going to, we can live RV park at RV park or just in the desert. In fact, that's what Quartzsite was well known for. Again, 14 days. They go down to Quartzsite out in the middle of the desert. I know a lot of people that we go out and meet these people over the years and so on. That was their life. They would be able to have some kind of vending thing, and they would sell trinkets and trash and whatever and make enough money to sustain them for a year or two. I mean, they'd do really well. Jennifer Jones out there, they're going to be coming on this next week, giving us an update on Quartzsite, what's going on there still. But she did dog grooming. So she's, you know, out there just grooming dogs. There are 15 gazillion senior citizens out there with their little Yorkies and so on. She's making a living grooming dogs. No. You got to have a city permit now. You got to have a license, de la whatever. You got to be registered with the state. You got to yada, 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 yada. You know, here we go. There's somebody out there somewhere making money. We're not getting our cut. And we're a gang with a flag. All right? You want us to show you our violin case? Okay, with our chopper in it? All right, well, that's what we'll do. So I see this progression, and I saw it happening in Quartzsite through the 90s, getting up to now. I mean, you could see the march of government coming. More buildings, more bonds, more debt. So Scott, Mr. X, okay, has this opportunity to share with us his view from the road. Now, to get a monthly bill and what he has, you have to incorporate all these other costs that are requirements. But let's set that aside. Let's go ahead and look at the lifestyle itself. The kind of people that where you would go before and now and so on, the kind of people that you encounter out there living the life that you are Has it changed, altered? Is the same mindset? Is economic desperation kind of set in? Was it more a philosophical thing? Are they just looking to be left alone? How are they taking care of their health? And so, I mean, like up at Jackalope Freedom Festival, Dennis and Karen, they're going on with books of actual samples of all the medicinal qualities of just the plants around and going over and showing, you need to know this stuff. You know, there's so much that we can do to take care of ourselves. Plus the diet, how does that keep you healthy? And so go ahead and give us, let's start with that. From the late 80s to now, tell us about the people. What has changed about the people living this lifestyle?
Well, you know, I've kind of always been a loner. There's very few people that I really feel an intellectual kinship with. I used to go up to Washington to the Liberty Magazine Editors Conference once a year for my intellectual recharge, and then I started going to this thing in Phoenix called the Freedom Summit. But basically, the rest of the year, there's very few people. It's most of the people that are out on the road are government parasites. They're either retired military or retired bureaucrats who are sucking off the government tit, and they all have this entitlement mentality. And for the most part, I just don't have anything in common with people who think that way. So there's not a whole, every once in a while I'll be out in the middle of nowhere and I'll run across some strange recluse that, and I've met some really interesting people, but they're few and far between.
Well, so how are you, you know, in contrast with, you know, if I were to look, I've known people like yourself that, you know, not even with as nice a rig as you, that, you know, because they, I don't know if it's for lack of choice or just a disposition, you know, the way they are, they just, you know, they just want to be left alone. They've carved out a niche for themselves that they're able to, you know, sometimes it's even a couple, you know, and they'll go out and they're just, hey, you know, it doesn't cost us anything. We go here to here to here to here and we live. In fact, a good friend of mine, his wife is a nurse that she would travel, and they had a nice fifth wheel that was a pop out enormous thing. And it was a Bobcat Volvo tractor trailer, a tractor, which means, you know, it's a, you know, the big 18 wheelers, and they took the engine part and they bobbed off one of the axles in the back. So it just had, instead of, you know, the two axles in the back, it just had one, because it was retired now. I mean, it didn't need to pull the big giant weight. It just pulled this fifth wheel. So it was almost small enough that could be their extra car. I mean, you could actually take it into a parking lot. So they went around the country for years just doing what you're doing, traveling from place to place as she would market herself in the highest rate that she could get as a nurse. Well,
right.
You know, those days are kind of, you know, over now. But now he's doing it again. He went back working in the nuclear industry, which is his first job. So he's back at Palo Verde. We found out that he can make more money going on the road. So now they're doing the same thing again. Boom, they're back on the road, going around, working at different plants. And this is a lifestyle that they said you go to, I think it was South Dakota or Iowa or something. I think it was one of the Dakotas. They would allow you to go and register your vehicle there. That you can register your vehicle by having an address there at some post office box. They made money catering to people just like you to lower their costs so that they can get low insurance, they get their low registration of their vehicles. They're just perpetual travelers, and that particular state welcomed that because they made a requirement you had to come visit them once a year or something. So I'm going, you know, there's an entire economy out there based on your lifestyle. But the man knows it, and they're coming after it. We'll talk about how they're coming after it when we come back.
We know you're out there. We can feel you now. We know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. We don't know the future. We aren't here to tell you how this is going to end. We're here to tell you how it's going to begin. We're going back to editing the next edition of Freedom's Phoenix Digital Magazine now, where we are telling the people what you don't want them to know. We're showing them a world without you, a world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries, a world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice we leave to you. Subscribe at freedomsphoenixeasing.com. That's freedoms with an S, phoenixeasing.com.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. And we have Mr. X on from Arizona. And, you know, the one thing that I just want to kind of get a beat on, as people have fewer and fewer options, you know, one of the things is, I mean, we have, the RV that we had donated and we kind of refurbed and got it and it's working. I mean, you know, I can go and, like, survive. I can go find me a nice place, dirt somewhere and water access and do and kind of create and plant and garden and, you know, live off of. And, you know, with technology, I, you know, you have satellite communications getting faster and faster. I have friends that live in a very remote farm area kind of thing, and it's been there for several years. And every year that we go back, they keep building on more and more stuff. And one of the things that I noticed is that if you got the money, you get the big enough dish and you pay the price, you can get some broadband freaking now out in the middle of nothing internet. And I'm going,
oh, yeah.
You know, this is, you, and now you add power to that, and you're done, man. You get access to water, power, internet, you're off the grid, man. You know, it's nice knowing you. So I need to kind of get an idea, you know, as you're meeting with the different people out there, has their technology increased? Has it gotten more and more higher standard of living in the past 20 years?
Yeah, well, when I, you know, you're talking about how nice my rig is, but when I first decided to do this, I searched and searched and searched, and I finally found an old trailer that was really inexpensive. The roof was leaking, the floor was rotted out, and I bought it. And I spent months rebuilding it. So, you know, it's like, that's kind of the way I am. I'm really frugal. But, you know, if you want to blow a lot of money, you can have, you know, you can have, the sky's the limit. So it just kind of, you were also talking about, I know several nurses who, they travel around and I don't know exactly what they call it, but they get temporary assignments at different hospitals and they'll work someplace for like 6 weeks or 8 weeks or whatever it is. And they paid better than the people who have full-time jobs there, and they get a housing stipend.
Right.
When they're living in their RV, the housing stipend is more than it costs them to camp their RV in a mobile home park or in an RV park or something.
Quite a bit more. You know, that's why they
do
it.
That really works for some people, but to me, you know, like the medical industry is a criminal cartel. You know, so the medical industry makes lots of money because the government prevents people from doing it without all of the licenses and stuff. So there's no free market there. So if you're comfortable working within that paradigm, you can do really well. But
well,
I'm not comfortable.
Well, how is your medical care? I mean, on the road, you go to a large, I keep bringing it, you know, good examples, like the courtside thing. I mean, it's like you'll go there, there's 3,500 people there when it's 115 degrees, and then all of a sudden it can swell to the hundreds of thousands. It gets to where some years there's 100,000 RVs out in the middle of the desert, and you know there's a bunch of, you know, doctors and nurses. So all of a sudden it's a good place, you know, to have free aid. You know, the anarchist healthcare kind of, you know, whatever, and you could have a free aid RV, go out and say, yeah, we'd be free aid. Well, you know, the man's going to show up and say, oh, I'm sorry. You're not allowed to help people, not without something. So, you know, I'm wondering how the people on the road, they take care of their medical care. I mean, are they eating roots or what?
Yeah, I have no idea. I grew up in a medical family. My grandfather and my grandmother were doctors. My father was a doctor. There's a bunch of other doctors. And basically, I understand how little, the, you know, conventional medicine knows, and I take care of myself. I eat really well. I'm really careful. And I don't go to doctors. And if something major happens to me, you know, it's going to be, I don't know what I'll do. Probably put a bullet in my head.
Well, that's solve one problem. The you don't have to go to the doctor anymore. The one thing that I wanted to kind of get an idea. I mean, you've been doing this 20-something years. How happy are you? Do you enjoy your life? Is your temperament such that you enjoy day to day getting up, going? I mean, or are you feel some kind of depression or desperation, or you're worried about the world? Or are you entertaining your mind? I mean, tell me how you feel about your existence.
Well, you know, when I first went on the road, I had no connection but payphones, and then eventually, like it was in the late 90s, I started being able to reconnect with my CompuServe account, and then I finally, you know, got an internet, got the satellite dish, and now I've got, you know, I'm online, I'm connected. I don't see. Everything is crashing, but at the same time, we're going to survive, and I hope that as humanity, we're going to learn something from whatever the disaster that's going to befall us is going to be. So, you know, long term, I've got hope for, you know, and I just, I'm proud of who I am. I'm comfortable with who I am. I entertain myself. I think and I communicate with people I respect, and I have projects that I work on and I do stuff. So, you know, I'm probably a lot different from a lot of people.
Well, you seem a sociable guy. I mean, you know, like all your screws are tight, you know. So I don't have a problem having you as a neighbor, friend, participant on the site and coming around. You send me some goodies and, you know, and as you say, you've been to Freedom Summits and everything. So you know who I am. You listen to the show enough over the years and so on. You kind of get it. You got the, you know, hang for a while and we got to meet each other. And I'm going, you know, in the future after everything crashes, I'd be glad Mr. X is around. So, you know, I want to also try and get, you know, glean something from somebody that's done it for two decades of what you have to share with other people out there that it may by, you know, not by choice, but by design, by requirement, by, you know, circumstances that they would have to take on your kind of life. What would you suggest to them? What kind of things should they expect? What should they need to know? You know, help them out.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Most of the people that when I am around a bunch of RVers, which is not too often, I'm generally by myself, but what I find is they generally are constantly running around having to have stimulation provided to them. They're going out to restaurants. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. And that's kind of, you know, I entertain myself. And so it doesn't cost me much.
Do you read a lot?
Oh yeah, I'm a voracious reader.
So you're always
reading in the internet, and then when I do run into people who are interesting, I had a great time at the Jackalope thing, and the Freedom Summits are just wonderful. But it's rarely that I meet people in general out in the normal world who I have something that, you know, we have something in common with each other.
Tell me about the Forest Service and their, you know, view of what you do. I mean, are they looking to ticket? They're looking to get rid of it? They're looking to regulate it? They look, you know, because it wasn't until not too long ago that the Forest Service actually had sidearms. I mean, their whole attitude has changed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they've become just an absolute Gestapo agency. Which is, you know, well, so the whole country is. So that's just the way it is.
So what's your interface with them? You just head down yes and boss, or, you know, are they nice to you, or are they looking to, you know, assert their authority over you, or what?
Well, just like anything else, just like police on the street, there's friendly good ones, and then there's ones that are out just looking to figure out some way they can score some brownie points and some money for the agency. So you just kind of... You know, and when you're out here, you know, you're out in the forest and you get a bunch of goons coming up to you with guns and stuff, it's like, you have to kind of say yes, sir.
Well, how many times have you been ticketed or fined?
Never, but I'm aware of what the rules are, and I'm really careful about the way I comport myself. And
yeah, you're just that retired old guy out in his RV not harming nobody, you know, so you might be able to skate. But if you're, 28 and a half with a young female friend and maybe a baby out surviving out in the woods, you're vulnerable. It was good spending time with you, Mr. X. Go ahead and hold on for just a little bit. I want to talk to you a little bit before we get into the next hour. Judge Gregg, the VP presidential candidate coming on at the end of the next hour. But I got some other stuff to talk about.
Live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today! Let us make them remember. We are not
come to bombs. Yeah, love not war, man. That's the future. This is, I feel it coming. You feel it coming. They want you to feel it coming. They want you to feel the inevitability of, just get over it, get used to it, desensitized to it. Here we go. Where's the outrage? And because they've siphoned it off. They desensitized. It's all a psyop. There's a secret handshake club manual. There's a manual. First you do this, you do this, you do this. Herman Goering thing. They go, if you're going to tell a lie, tell a really big one and tell it a lot, And this is, can we inoculate ourselves against the BS? There is an exchange. I'm going to, I don't think it's... I'm going to go ahead and read this. This is from my good friend Charles Goyette. What happened was there's a group that we go to. It's an economic discussion group. And I just... I don't got to give out names, but I'll just tell you who these guys are. One guy is big funder, spent a lot of money, GOP kind of, older guy having big fundraisers and congressmen. I've been to his home Paradise Valley and they're just, and Ernie, got to wear a tie. Okay. So you go there and they do their, little hobnobbing thing and so on. And oh, by the way, I expect you to, fill in the blank and so on. So money. All right, represents lots of money and wants to have, an influence in it. Hey, man, didn't I have a fundraiser for you? You say, I better get my whatever. Well, I tell you, over the past few decades, these are conversations I have with some of these guys. When you buy a politician, you expect them to stay bought. That was the big push in the 90s for term limits. They were so angry that they would spend all this resources and money getting these guys in the office, and then they wouldn't do what they agreed to do, got them in there to begin with, but they couldn't get them out because the special interest spent all the money keeping, and it made them mad. So the people with some money, a lot of them were the developers and so on, here in Arizona, they go, we're doing term limits. Because once they're in a couple of terms, can't control them anymore. They don't do what they say they did. They aren't bought. So they wanted to have new guys to put in that they'd buy. Oh, then they find out they're just competing with even bigger money, going, yeah, well, this guy kissed our butt from before and whatever, and we keep him in, and it just spent all your money. Now what? You still don't get your guy. I mean, it's just corruption. Whenever you create the power, you know, the money always finds the power. So everybody's going, oh, we got to eliminate the corporate money and the money and have, you know, a financial reform of the, you know, whatever, the money. And I'm going, no, you don't. You know, Judge Buttrick, he ran for governor here in Arizona as a libertarian in 94. And that was really when we really first, you know, really launched. And here we are. And they made him a judge, get him out of the way is what they did. And he made the point, he's going, look, man, money in politics is not the problem. It's the power. The money will always find its way to the power. You have the power to grant favors and do this and that and so on. It's the power. And I took advantage of that philosophy in forums and debates when I was running for Secretary of State in 94. I'm a young guy, you know. They didn't expect that much from me, you know, but all of a sudden it was kind of like all the colleges and high schools and all the, you know, the alternative newspapers and everything, they're all endorsing me. Well, that pissed them off. Of course, they don't care. You know, they'll do the major newspapers and networks and everything is what they care about. But, you know, Generation Next, this is where I first started seeing the power of Generation Next, is like these guys, you know, it's 15 years later, all of a sudden now they're in positions of influence and, like, you know, we just got to breed them out, man. We just wait for all the older guys to just die off. I mean, this is from personal experience. Well, what happened was there was an issue to where the Speaker of the House, which was Jane Hull, later would become governor after they, you know, pushed impeached Symington. She's Secretary of State, blah, blah, blah. Well, what happened was this. She had been given some Ping golf clubs, a set, as a gift of whatever. The Democrat, which was president of the Senate, was just jealous, but they got their own little thing going on. But they made a big deal out of she got these Ping golf clubs. Hell, I don't even know if she golfed. So I'm going, you know, they were like, ah, see, it's bribing and this, that, and so on. What say you, Mr. Libertarian, hate the government and whatever, Ernie? And I go, all right, let me give you my opinion. Same thing as Judge Buttrick. I go, look, you know what the problem is? The problem is not the golf clubs. The problem is the power that she had of why she got the golf clubs. I go, you will always get golf clubs. Or cars, or trips, or whatever. And they hide it in various different ways. It's a fact-finding, you know, hedonism to orgy trip. I mean, you know, whatever. So I go, the problem is the power. The second that you have the power to grant favors, to do kind of tax deals, to give some subsidy to license whatever, to eliminate competition, monopolize whatever, the power that you have, boom, the money's going to get to it. I guarantee it. And I don't care how much McCain-Feingold you have. So it's 10 years later when I run against McCain in 2004. McCain-Feingold, I sung that song as much as possible. Do you really think this makes a difference? I go, first off, you can do whatever the heck you want anyway with your money and as long as you don't do with the campaign. And they had big, giant billboards all around the valley that John McCain, you know, greatest person, human on the planet, you know, this billboard paid privately by Mr. and Mrs. What you call it. Didn't have anything to do with the campaign. You know, he got, you know, billboards for it, you know, privately funded, whatever, anyway, because they could, you know. And I'm going, okay, yep. So even McCain... No, get benefits from, you know, First Amendment. We get do what we want, kind of, you know, it's all a joke. So when the Levolution came, I go, guess what? We'd be signed making SOBs, man. So I'm just going, you know, so bring it on. In 06, I ran for Secretary of State. I go and I met with the Clean Elections people. Now, what they had done is they created a private PAC, a political action group or, you know, a committee or whatever it is, called Clean Election, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. It was funded by, you know, whoever wanted to fund it. And then they interfaced closely with the Secretary of State. Might as well just been the Department of Government. They'd say, oh, no, no, no. We're a private. Yeah, well, you live down here at the Secretary of State, so who we kidding? So what they did is they have all this Clean Election stuff. You have to, you know, get so many signatures or $5 donations from everybody and you get all this free government money for you to run campaign. And that was used and abused and still is. And it's just a big joke. But I go to them and I said, you know, I'm wondering if I put a sign up and you have all these signs, and you got, you know, in the top corner an angle, and it says endorsed by fill in the blank, you know, the local newspaper, the chamber or whatever, the fraternal order of what you call it, the police, the firemen, whatever. They put that up there, and I go, well, at the very least, the newspaper is a company. It is a for-profit, you know, corporation, de la, whatever. What's and I knew the answer. There wasn't any, you know, restriction or anything like that. But I wanted to go in. I'm going to be a butthead. So I go up, and I'm just wondering, if I have a sign I put up and I put endorsed by, you know, what's the regulation on that? You know, can I, you know, by Napa Auto Parts? You know, by you know, freaking Pillsbury. I mean, you know what? You know what's the restriction? Well, there's not. We can't. I go, does it have to be black on yellow? Have to be an angle? I go, you know what? My signs say endorsed by freedomsphoenix.com. Now what? Oh, they didn't like that. Hundreds of signs. Yeah. Still voting? It's all a game. It's all a game. It's all a game.
This is Charles Goyette, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Dollar Meltdown, so you can learn how to protect yourself and your family. Now, you can audit the Fed. You can end the Fed. But why not start by ignoring the Fed? Visit DontTreadOnMeme.com. That's Don't Tread on M-E-M-E, Fashioning the Silver Economy. A meme, a contagious idea that spreads within a culture, a spontaneous order. Nowhere is this more evident than in one's free choice in that most marketable of commodities, money. Let us Austrians use wallet voting. Don't Tread on Meme, the leading craftsman of silver dime trading cards, as well as some offbeat liberty-themed apparel. Follow the history of the dime card outreach at onceuponadime.info and get a silver calculator app at whatisthiscoinworth.info. Boycott an empire of theft. Build a society of consent. Don't Tread on Meme. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Bit of, you know, I found the you know, some of the old music files I was looking for. I go, oh, there they are. Okay, and then we get some new music. Yay! All right, now this is where we were going with this, and you know, I get sidetracked. I always do. All right, on Charles Goyette's response to this email about in support of Paul Ryan. Okay, this is what was going on. Now in here, you know, I just, you know, without giving names, you know, here's the guy that owns his own big insurance agency, doing well, goes golfing all the time, good time. Here's another guy that, you know, wants to be on top of the Christmas list of every freaking, you know, list of GOP, can I please and send me and whatever, and does that. Here's a columnist in the newspaper that has a kind of a political gossip column. Here's a guy that works for, might as well just say, the Koch brothers, you know, and he does his thing. Then here's a big investor, a big contributor to, you know, Cato and to the GOP here and local, and get them to do what they want them to do. Here's another author, a writer of various books, and a columnist. Let's see. Here's an economist, a doctor, a professor, an economist, a judge, you know, a constitutional attorney for various different organizations, a plastic surgeon, a doctor, a radio producer, let's see, on and on and on and on. I mean, you get the idea. You know, a lot of these guys, you know, wealthy individuals, you know, stock market guys, own various companies and everything, insurance actuary, the state, you know, department of, you know, this is the list. In this list, you know, people that, so it starts going back, here they're coming, and it's really a campaign, and this is what they're doing. They're going, hey, look, you can't sit on the sidelines, you libertarians. You know, if you sit on the sidelines out there and you say it's, you know, Ron Paul or nobody, well, then Obama's going to get it. And you can't have it. You cannot argue that having Obama there again, that's going to, you know, and I'm like, man, you guys don't get it. You're confusing us with somebody who thinks there's a difference. And that sends them into orbit. I went to a large mega church here in the 90s, primarily, in Arizona. It's called North Phoenix Baptist. And that's where Trent Franks, congressman, and then a former congressman, J.D. Hayworth. And we ran 96 and 98. Bob Anderson, you heard, you know, the guy that Palo Verde nuclear guy with the off-grid, you know, system, helping me work on this power thing that we're doing. And that's what this next edition of the magazine is: power to the people. What happens when we are off the grid, when we can produce our own electricity? Then what? How does that change everything? Not just philosophically, but physically. I mean, you know, the, you know, government, man, they like, you know, having you on the grid. So what happens when you're off? Whether, regardless of where you live, we're just, you know, you're not getting to my cut. Now what? Oh, all these words are for energy. You know, well, I got my own. Thank you very much. Now what? Yeah, I'm plugging into my Tesla mobile that, you know, I'm using a solar array to charge my car, to power my house. And, oh, my backup battery is in the trunk of my car. Now, a lot of people didn't realize that. And you start doing electric cars, the car becomes the battery pack. You know, and when you're not home, your battery pack, you got two cars. Or two batteries. Heck, that's your battery. You don't need the battery. The batteries are in your freaking car. You know, this is coming. They got to be in there or something. There's some desperation to coming. This is where we're going. You know, we did, we'll talk about it, you know, when we got time later in the week or next week on, you know, all the equipment that we're buying and some of the supplies and the raw materials. And I got my son interested. He's home now after they have my fourth grandchild and his third. But, you know, we had grandchild this weekend, and now he's staying home for this week. Then he's like, I'm bored. I don't got nothing, you know. And I get him all interested in the battery, and he starts to, ooh, and you need this and this and this. And I go, yeah, see, I'm sucking him in. Come on. I know you wanted to. So he works in, he goes, you don't need all this equipment to do, you don't need, heck, he did this. You know, since he was 18, 20, you know what, you know, 6-7 years, he's been using, you know, rectifiers to do the plating of the, you know, the blah, blah, blah with the whatever and the milling and the material of and the kind of, and the, you know, what, I'm, all right, fine. Well, then you can help me. Yeah, okay, you need this, 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 this. There, I just saved you $4,000. Thank you. So this is, you know, this power thing is, you know, going to be a big deal. But in their desperation, what do they want now? Pay attention to me. Pay attention to me. It's important. Don't, you can't just abandon it. You know, Ron Paul or nobody. Oh, you know, you guys, we need you. Got to have you. Without you, we can't. Oh yeah, you're saying that now. But we're going to get Obama. Yeah, and the difference is what? And that was when J.D. Hayworth was running. Bob Anderson was running against him, and Hayworth, Owens, Anderson, 1 and 2, 96 and in 98, they had the same three guys running for the race. And the reason was, and it was interesting to see the difference in the tone of the race. The first one, they wanted to avoid Bob like a plague, but he always had the most clever things to say. We got to build a firewall around Social Security. And he's like going, can we build a firewall around my wallet? In a debate, you know, it was a statewide debate. He goes, I just want to build a firewall around my wallet, my money. Why are we doing talk about it? You know, and everybody went, yeah, what he said. And they're like, oh. So the next time, all of a sudden, saying my liberal opponent, you know, referring to the other guy, J.D. Hayworth, arms and legs wrapped around Bob. Well, during this, you know, going into the second one, J.D. Hayworth at church, and it's a big mega church, so it's a big stairways, you know, between the floors and so on, when you don't do the elevator. And we're in the stairway. Classes started. He had his little kids with him. I had mine. And he goes, Ernie, if you guys keep doing this, you know, you're going to give it to the Democrat. I can't believe, you know, why are you doing this? You know, we're so close last time. This time you do this, you could very well give it to the Democrat. And I go, J.D., you're confusing me with someone that thinks there's a difference. Oh, we called him McGilla Gorilla, because when he got pissed, he turned purple. Man, he was purple. And he just, you know, oh, if the kids weren't there, they're, you know, I mean, there have been some arms swinging or something, man. I mean, he was pissed. These people, they're a different kind of person. They got, you know, they're not used to this kind of thing. I mean, they may expect it from, you know, the opposition. They're still kind of on the same team. But to have these damn libertarians just, you know, throwing wrenches in their stuff, man, it sends them into freaking, you know, convulsions. You think I'm kidding? I mean, anyway. As we do the Tea Party, when they first started doing that, it was like 09, 10, when they first started doing these Tea Parties. The first one that they had here in Arizona, it's Arizona State Capitol. But at the time, he had lost his seat to Harry Mitchell, which was a corrupt, Tempe local politician, you know, a mayor or something there, and kind of beat him, that just because J.D. was his own worst enemy. But anyway, so What happened, he goes on the afternoons to be a talk show host. Well, then he ran again, I think, and lost again. Well, anyway, so I don't know what he's doing. But he had the GOP support of Clear Channel, De La, whatever. As we're doing that, you know, they're covering it live. Well, of course, he and all the talk, oh, yeah, my good friend Ernie and my best friend, you know, my friend, you know, friend, my brother and all that kind of, I mean, seriously, you know, it's just a game that they play. So, I mean, I'm not mean to these guys other than just, you know, cordial, you know, but they, you know, man, we don't have anything in common. It's this list that this conversation is going back and forth, and I haven't participated in it. I got a post that I'm just ready to send them. I'll probably send it during the break now. I sent one, but the text somehow got lost in the email. Excuse me. But so we're going to, I'm going to go ahead and read to you what Charles said about this Paul Ryan thing, and it pretty much sums it up. My thing was, Generation X doesn't care, and you can't make them. We'll be right back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I'm here. It's not playing. What happened, man? You know, I'm doing the button right. Am I doing it right? I did. I got problems again. Dang it. Anyway, hello. You know, rock and roll head banging music. Pretend. Along with me, chair dance. Okay, we're done. All right. Now, this is what I'm working on now is the email going back to them. And basically, you know, it wasn't really long. It was probably, you know, 250 words. Basically, it just said, look, man, you know, blah, 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 blah. Generation X is more informed. They get it. It's global. They understand. It's a generational that doesn't have, they don't recognize borders and boundaries. They don't recognize, you know, shiny badges and flags as legitimacy to whatever was promised. It's been a big lie anyway. Get over it. So these people are, you know, the exact people that I was talking about. They were probably my age now, and maybe even a little bit younger, in their 40s, 50s, and now they're in their 60s and 70s, a lot of them. That and there's a lot of younger guys that come in there, too, along, you know, my age and even younger. But I was the kid. I was one of the young guys. I was one of the guys that, you know, oh, he's just, you know, they, you know, whatever. He did not. Now, I understood. I understood their attitude. I understood their, you know, every now and then there'd be some function and I'd be at the dining table, or I would be at the bar, or I'd be out and they'd come over and engage in conversation. Bernie, don't you think? And, you know, if we could use your talents to direct the blah, blah, blah towards what we, there's a future for you in the, you know, in the collective being whatever and kind of, you know, and we give you this opportunity as because it's like a favor and we honor you with the ability and the opportunity to be our slave, to do what we want. I know. And I guess thanks, but no thanks. So as time has gone on, you have example after example after example, and even the Levolution was not enough. Yeah, but see, that didn't, you know, you didn't attain power. You didn't get the shiny badge. You didn't. I'm going, man, you guys are really lost. You don't get it. It doesn't come from that. It's a, you know, it's a freed mind. You know, the ramifications of that are, you can't even, hell, I don't even know what's going to happen. You know, but I know it's not going to be what you think. So, Paul Ryan, all of a sudden, man, it's all we got. It's not so much a support of Ryan as it is an opposition to Obama. But the Ryan plan, you know, this has been pushed heavy. I could see this didn't shock me one bit. You know, was it always Paul Ryan? Was it always he was the pick? Well, it would seem like it. If you look back over the last year, it's been the Ryan plan this, the Ryan plan that, the Ryan plan. What is the Ryan plan? It is going after entitlements while increasing military spending. That is the bottom line. Yes, we got to address this fiscal thing. We got to get our, you know, AAA rating back up. We got to, you know, America, the dollar, blah, blah, blah. Oh, but we're spending the money. It's the opposite of what Dr. Paul has been saying. He goes, fine, you want to, you know, maintain this entitlement. You want to, you know, whatever. You know, we need to transition off of that. We need to get off of this welfare state. But you can only do that if you eliminate the warfare state. So this is just 180 degrees from what they're advocating. Oh, we got to go whip somebody's butt, and then we'll cut the old people and, you know, off of their whatever. Now, so there is no fix. This is. I mean, think about it. The concept of licensed health care and all the controls of and the government and the FDA and all the pharmaceuticals and all that kind of, that's not going to go away. but they're going to restrict access to medical care, you know, even more. They're going to, you know, the old people, you're just left, you know, a death panel, you know, get ready. So I can, it's just crap. Well, Charles did a really good job. I'm going to read this to you, and you can, you know, get an idea of, you know, how he rolls with this. Now, it started off with the praises of Ryan and how this is great and wonderful. Great news, everyone. We've talked with is pleased. This will give, now this is from, you know, a very wealthy kind of, you know, mover and shaker in the Republican Party here in Arizona. I mean, if you're talking to top boys, you know, he's on the list. This will give people a real choice about what they want the country to be, to try to restore a productivity and prosperity, or to continue on the path to being a stagnant, bankrupt European welfare state. Everyone also shared my concern about the Romney campaign getting into a fatal bickering over Ryan's budget. If Romney's staff and Ryan can limit budget discussions to, we have to listen to all proposals and balancing the budget and reducing the deficits and agree on solutions, quote, you can avoid having the Democrats mobilize the farmers, unions, seniors, welfare recipients, government workers, and many other pressure groups by pointing out the hits each group would take in Ryan's budget. Ryan is so effective in pointing out Obama's and the Democrats' mistakes and incompetence, he can be a real asset if he goes on the offensive while arguing budget details. That's for after the election. It might also be useful for Romney to make a clear statement about Romney care. It, quote, it seems right for Massachusetts, but Obamacare is obviously unpopular and needs to be replaced with a good program, blah, blah. Yeah, we're going to replace it with more, you know, government, whatever. Is obviously, let's see, and the outline, and then outline a possible program and say that needs to be analyzed carefully with public input and replacing a program agreed upon, blah, blah, blah. So this is, it's just playing politics. You know, it's just, you know, we got to get the GOP thing in there. Right? Here comes Charles' response. Now, there was a lot of response. It went back and forth, ouch, quit it, and, you know, Charles just cut through the crap. I'm surprised at the enthusiasm for Paul Ryan. He sounds more like poppycock than deficit hawk. Ryan voted for an unfunded prescription drug bill, TARP, and the auto bailouts, and now he decides to be a debt hawk? The Ryan plan calls for increased defense spending and more total federal spending. He suggests slowing the rate of increase in the debt. I remember when he used to laugh at Democrats who agreed to tough-minded cut, which were nothing more than slowing the rate of increase in the budget, because he was making fun of the Democrats for saying the same thing. Ryan calls for no agencies to be ended, and he hopes to balance the budget in 30 years, perhaps. He voted for two unending wars and to make the Patriot Act a permanent feature of American life. A serious approach to our fiscal and monetary problems demands a serious assessment of our situation. Professor Kotlikoff wrote last week that the U.S. government's fiscal gap, the true measure of the nation's indebtedness, is now $222 trillion. Last year, it was $211 trillion. The $11 trillion difference? This year's true federal deficit is 10 times larger than the official deficit. The designation of Ryan by the father of Romney care and the stepfather of Obamacare is not unexpected. That's the problem. It reminds me of Einstein's often cited observation that no problem can be fixed from the same consciousness that created it. But deficit hawk? More like chicken hawk. Charles Goyette. And they want the Ron Paul Lovelution, the supporters of, I don't know, proper role of government, fiscal restraint, blah, 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 that, you know, we got to embrace Ryan and the Ryan budget and Romney because what? He's not as bad as Obama? You know, I wouldn't even say that. I mean, you know, is Obama, you know, a speed bump on this, you know, war with Iran? You know, or is he going to capitulate to the pressure and say, yes, war with Iran, because that's what Israel is waiting on. They need some kind of a confirmation that if they go, you know, poking the bear and they start, you know, shooting war and they got China and Russia involved in everything, that they got Big Bubba back behind them with aircraft carriers saying, you know, we're siding with Israel. You know, and if they aren't getting a full, you know, we're going to go military whatever from Obama, well, heck, we'll just get Romney in there. So I'm like, So it's death and taxes. That's my choice. You know, so I'm just like, it is phenomenal to me that they look us straight in the face and say, and fortunately, a lot of the comments are like this. You know, like, I don't think they anticipate, but they, hey, man, I am a elderly statesman, rich supporter of the GOP, and we have made a decision, and we need you guys, you know, and you know, I've been approached personally, but I'm telling you, I'm going, what? What? Judge Gray, when we come back, VP Libertarian, see what they have to say about all of this when we come back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back. We got limited time, so we want to get right to it. This is what we're going to do. We have Judge Gray on as the VP candidate, along with Gary Johnson for President of the United States, representing the Libertarian Party. Now, we got just this segment. He just flew in. He's here in Phoenix. He's doing, you know, his woo-hoo, whistle stop, whatever. And we're very honored to have him come on the show. Now, we've talked to Judge Gray before. Donna, go ahead and take the previous interview and link it up at today's archive. And, you know, people can listen. We talked about right after the convention. Now, we've had Gary Johnson in studio. We've had a long conversation. Go ahead and put that one up, too. And then you can get, you know, kind of philosophy in behind. But what we want to do is right now get to the news. Judge Gray, we have just had this last weekend, the Romney campaign selected Paul Ryan, gag me with a forklift, as the your counterpart. And, you know, that would be interesting to have a debate with, you know, Biden, you know, Ryan, and you. And I go, you know, so I'm looking at, what is the difference? They're trying, and they're even using the word libertarian with Paul Ryan. You just want to strangle the television. So I'm going, you know, how libertarian are they, and how do you contrast with the selection? Go ahead and take the rest of the segment and say whatever you want, Judge.
Well, indeed. You know, I look forward to being able to debate against Paul Ryan and Joe Biden, for example.
Got a great show.
But, and Ryan's a decent guy. He has no particular worldly experience. His voting record is simply not only not libertarian, it's really not mainstream. He supports the Iraq war. He doesn't want to bring home our troops from Afghanistan. You know, these are things that simply are not palatable. And, you know, you're talking about balancing the budget in, what, 22 years? This just is unworkable, just like what Romney is talking about. But at least it's a comment from Romney that he's finally taking the economy seriously, and I welcome that. We must be a part of the debates. We are mainstream in the United States of America with the voters. We really will come at Mr. Romney from the right. We really do want to limit the power and the size of government. We'll really come at Mr. Obama from the left. We really do want to repeal the Patriot Act. We want to stand up for civil liberties. So these are things that are stark contrasts. Governor Gary Johnson is the most qualified person to be president of the United States that I know of. He has real-world experience. He has, my goodness, started his own company, had a payroll that he met of 1,000 people. We have real-world experience. I've been a judge for 25 years, for heaven's sake. I've seen pretty much everything that can go wrong in society. We work with it. We figure out what works and what doesn't under the law. We don't understand what laws work. I was a federal prosecutor. I'll be the only person that's been a military veteran of the six of us. You know, and I'll be the first Peace Corps volunteer to be elected to national office. So all of these things we bring to the table, if we can be seen in the debates and as viable, I think we'll be the odds-on favorite to win this election.
Okay, now this is, you know, let's look at this. You know, of the six people involved, you know, the Republican, Democrat, Libertarians, you have Gary Johnson, governor, vetoed 700 and whatever bills. I mean, you know, and that, you know, probably saved New Mexico from, you know, economic collapse. And I'm going, okay, so why isn't he getting the attention even when he was running as a GOP candidate? And I'm going, well, that's why. They don't want somebody like that. You are a judge that's, you know, well known for having come out against the drug war, the war on some drugs or whatever. You're going, no, this is not working. So that, man, they sure as heck don't want you involved. So I'm going, it's because you are such a good couple. It's because you represent such contrast. It's because you offer something totally different. It's that reason why they don't want you in. Has there been any communication with you on your participation in the process?
No, not particularly. They are adamant to keep us from being in the debates. You know, it is the National President's Debate Commission that is deciding who will be invited and who isn't. By the way, they're made up of only Republicans and Democrats. Ross Perot was the last one to be invited to the as a third party to the debate back in 1992.
Well, a couple of billion dollars will do that.
Well, that doesn't hurt, but he didn't have the worldly experience, of course, that Governor Johnson does. But we will be a part of the debates, and one way or the other, we may very well poll at the 15%. Once the Ron Paul supporters realize, of course, that Ron Paul is not going to be nominated, I'll be in Tampa. We'll welcome them as part of the family. So we're fully anticipating that we will poll well enough. But the critical issue here is we will put in a coalition government. We will actually have people in our government administration that certainly are libertarians and independents, but also Republicans and Democrats, as long as they ascribe to our ideals of reduced government intrusion, financial responsibility, social tolerance. And then when we have problems with the Democrat or Republican Party, we'll have highly placed people in our administration go out, talk to their colleagues and say, wait a minute, get on board. This is a good idea. Embrace it. So we can do that, and regardless of whether it's Romney or Obama elected, they have no prayer of being able to do anything better than this bipolar Congress that they have going on right now. This is what the people of the United States crave. They will be embracing it as soon as we are seen as viable. It's the most exciting thing that's happened to me since the birth of my children.
You know, I am not in that viable category like I care. You know, I mean, I'm not here trying to pick a winner of a horse race. I'm wanting someone to represent my philosophy. And a lot of the people that are large supporters of Dr. Paul's effort, I don't vote. Heck, I haven't voted since 02. You know, I don't have anything to do with it. And we're, you know, heavy duty in the Loveolution thing, espousing libertarian principle. So I, you know, the energy that you saw in a lot of this, you know, really had nothing to do with who gets to wear the ring of power. It was all about advocating for a philosophy. And in contrast with what Dr. Paul was advocating, is there a difference with what you and Johnson are putting up? I mean, are you guys, you say, hey, we're libertarian like Ron Paul, or is there an accept or but in there?
Well, there's many similarities between us and Ron Paul. Many, although I can also say that there are many things that are between us and the Tea Party. I can also say there are many things that are between us and the Move On or Occupy movements. It just depends which issue you're talking about, but we are in the political mainstream. We will
define that. Political mainstream, what does that mean? I just want to be a leave-me-alone-ist. I just want the government to leave me alone.
You betcha, and that's certainly a major part of it. We are financially responsible. I mean, we really do want to reduce the size and intrusion and cost of government. We want more local government. I mean, of course we believe in government, but we believe in more local government. We believe that, you know, taxation with representation isn't all that wonderful either. The taxation is too big. The government is too strong. The government is obese, and it must be reduced in size. We are also socially tolerant, and we really do feel that you or I as adults should be able to live our lives as we choose, unless that is adversely affecting other people. And that is not what the Democratic Party stands for. We would repeal the death penalty because it isn't working, regardless of your philosophy. We stand up for that. We would abolish the war on drugs, which is probably the worst policy in the United States of America, second only to slavery. We are, in fact, funding juvenile gangs all around the country. We're funding Mexican drug cartels, these tribal warlords in Afghanistan. It goes on and on, simply not working. Let's take that money and use it to pay our firefighters and our teachers and fix our roads instead of funding juvenile gangs and Mexican drug cartels.
Well, this is, you know, becoming very well known to a lot of people. I'm just wondering, you know, is this starting to catch on? Are people starting to see the libertarian movement, and certainly the movement has obviously been embraced. I mean, heck, they're going around saying how libertarian Paul Ryan has gagged me with a forklift. But the main thing is, I'm wondering what kind of enthusiasm coming from the people for your guys' campaign. Are your visits on your web pages up? Are people, are you kind of waiting for the GOP nomination to be done with? Or, you know, I mean, what are you looking forward to?
Well, the answer is yes to all of those. It's a question of exposure. I'm going around the country. Like you know, I just landed in Phoenix. We'll be meeting with the Caravan for Liberty. In fact, I was with them when they came across the border in San Diego. One woman holding up a sign of four sons killed, a violent death because of the war on drugs, that sort of thing. So we're traveling around the country. It's a question of exposure. People are really getting excited. All they need to do is to see exactly what we stand for. We are in the social mainstream, in the political mainstream. We will win this election if we can get into debate and seen as viable. This is exciting. It's something I believe in deeply, and so do other people, the more they find out who we are, what we've done, and what we'll do.
Go ahead and give out the webpage where people should be going to get more information.
Well, and thanks for that. It's GaryJohnson2012.com. GaryJohnson2012.com.
Gary Johnson.
Get more information.
GaryJohnson2012.com.
And I like what you see.
I understand what you mean. You know, it's becoming mainstream, but I'm just like, ew. Some of the mainstream is kind of what they say is mainstream, ain't mainstream. You're competing for the word of mainstream, and how about freedom? I say freedom's mainstream.
Indeed.
We'll go find that out.
Our theme is live free, as you know.
Live free. Gary Johnson, 2012. Thank you, Judge Gray, for coming on.
Anytime. Do it soon.